start in Vegas, broadcasting live from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada, in my backyard, chilling, man. I'm sorry if you guys can't see me. The lighting's a little bit bad, but it was too late because we said we were going live for the first time. I didn't want to have you guys holding up, waiting too long. I'm in here with the only Sacramento King that I know, the OG of the show. What's good, Spreadster? How are you?
Man, I'm excited to talk some NBA today, and hopefully Ski can help me get back on track, because there's about two series that I just keep flip-flopping the wrong way. Boy, 112-105 last night. I'm thinking, boy, that Pistons money line's going to cash. Nope, I got Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I was on the other side on that one too, but I'm glad that my guy Ski was able to cash on that. I forgot he gave it out on the show, and that's why I sent him a text after I saw the post. Always happy to have my brother in here. What's good? How you doing, Ski Profit?
I can't complain, man. I'm here. I'm breathing. I'm living. It's nice to cash them Knicks too. I wish I would have doubled up and took them again. I almost did. I just didn't want to have too much exposure, I guess you could say, but nice to cash that Knicks ticket for sure.
All right, man, we got a really strong show that we're about to. We're going to, you know, go over all of the NBA playoffs that we took last week and things like that. But before we get into that, I just got a quick question real quick. I'm going to shoot it to Ski first. Ski, I know you've been at war like me this week. What the hell is going on with the media with this Shedeur Sanders
stuff? Oh, boy.
And they're making it, and it's like a code word that they sent out to everyone who's on the other side, and that's the code word circus. And I hate it, because when I think of circus, I think of clowns and monkeys. So it makes me feel like almost you're being disrespectful to Coach Prime and the Sanders family, because why is this the key word that I keep using? But how is this kid supposed to be held liable for the fact that if he does anything anywhere, someone has a camera out, and then the national media gets it, makes a big deal out of it, shoots it out to all their outlets because they know how popular and polarizing he is, and people catch on, and then now you know, next thing you know, it's everywhere, but he's bringing the circus. What did you think about this?
I mean, people just don't want to like him. That's just what it is. It has nothing to do with on the field for most people. Some people, it might be what they see on the field. But for majority of people, I think they just don't like him as a person. Maybe they don't like his dad. Maybe they don't like, they feel like he has nepotism. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case may be, they just don't like it. But I mean, I just disagree. From what I've seen, I've watched enough Colorado games. What he was able to do with that terrible offensive line, I've seen enough. Like, he definitely has more talent to go higher than fifth round. So I didn't understand it.
It's funny that you use the word nepotism, because I don't think it's any part of business in the sports world that has more nepotism than the scouting department and assistant coaches. Like, they all know each other. They're all friends. They're all homeboys. So for them to use that just seems like a scapegoat excuse to me. Spread. We had Andrew Luck come from the Fluent family. We had Eli Manning come from the Fluid family. We had Peyton Manning come from the Fluid family. And they're not the only ones. Kyler Murray's dad does really well for himself, too. Kevin Murray does really well coaching kids in the Dallas area quarterback. So why are they using this, saying that he's a spoiled brat or he's a spoiled kid? Why does it offend people so much with this kid's background? He's been on TV, man, since he was a small kid. Like, people can go back and follow his whole life on TV, you know, because Deion had all these different reality shows throughout their life, you know. So I just want to know, what do you think, Spirit? Why are they using that and trying to say he's a spoiled brat?
I mean, he probably is kind of spoiled and entitled, right? When these things are coming out about the way he was treating these interviews, there was a sense of entitlement to him. But at the end of the day, I think this, and this is probably where we disagree with the scouting departments, I think it's a referendum on his tape. We know these teams are willing to take on almost anyone if they think that'll help you win. I mean, look at the player that got drafted to the Baltimore Ravens. a lot worse background than Shedeur Sanders, right? A lot worse than doing this. But what this draft told me is that they just disagree with us. What we saw, we said, you know what, this is going to translate to the NFL. We saw the toughness. We saw the accuracy, and we saw the ability to read defenses. the scouts obviously didn't see that, or a team would have taken a chance on him. So we'll see who's proven right or wrong. Unfortunately for us, because, you know, I've been Team Shador. I'm wanted him with the Raiders at the number 6 overall pick. You remember me on here in December when we lost that game to Jacksonville because I thought that he was going to go number 2. Yeah. And I really wanted him, and I still wanted him even after we signed Geno Smith. So it's a disagreement here. But what I'm worried is, number one, we talked about this before the draft. I don't think Cleveland's a good landing spot. I mean, they've just always been a poorly run franchise. And the fact that they drafted 2 quarterbacks in the 3rd and 5th round is kind of another indictment of the way they run things. And then I'm also worried that he's not going to get multiple chances like he would if he was drafted in the 1st round. And my example would be, let's just say Cam Ward has problems in Tennessee, or even another Tennessee quarterback, Will Levis. Because they were drafted high, they're going to get more opportunities. Is this going to be a situation where he gets what I don't consider to be a good opportunity because I don't like the way the Cleveland's run? And then let's say he fails there. Are they going to blame that on him, or just look at the number of quarterbacks that have failed in Cleveland? It's a quarterback prospect graveyard. So, boy, for him to fall this far in the draft and then go to what I consider to be one of the worst spots, I thought was pretty disappointed, especially as someone who's been on not just this show, The Wagering World, but the other shows that I do, saying you guys are missing the boat. This guy's going to be a really good player. You know, I'm worried that I'm going to have to take the L here because he's not going to get a fair opportunity.
He might get a fair opportunity because the owner seems to have a pretty decent relationship with his father, and I think that's who pulled the strings. Now it goes down to his Andrew Berry, the type of GM who controls what the head coach does. If he allows the coach to do his thing, I think Kevin Stefanski will end up rolling with him because Stefanski hasn't had an accurate quarterback since Baker Mayfield in his offense. And Stefanski's been coach of the year twice. He's not a bad coach. He just hasn't had much to work with. Jameis Winston was definitely not ideal for his system because everything that Shador does is pretty much what Stefanski likes, and that's just being able to complete high-percentage medium-range passes, man, and keep the offense going with West Coast-style offense. I think that he's going to get an opportunity as long as Bear doesn't get in the way. I could see all on Bear's face that he was a hater when it comes to the situation, but I kind of anticipated him going to Cleveland after we got the news that the Raiders might wasn't a go. Remember, we talked about Cleveland as being probably the landing spot, and I think that he's going to end up being okay because I believe that both franchise and himself, they needed each other. It's going to be a situation where underdogs kind of get a chance to, you know, do their thing. So we always do it for what the underground and underdogs. So we root for Cleveland now and Shador as he has the number one selling jersey in the NFL. Let's get straight to the pass, Britt.
All right. And Ski, I hate to do this to you, but we're going to really start off with the number one story. And I'll admit, I was guilty of it as well yesterday on my on my NBA rundown because unfortunately, and this is the way of the world nowadays, rather than really celebrate a cool story there in Minnesota with, you know, Rudy Gobert finally looking like a good player in the playoffs, Julius Randle raising his game when he had 200 million reasons not to. I mean, he could have easily just retired and enjoyed life. He raised his game. Ant Edwards is a great young story. Mike Conley, the grizzled veteran. Jaden McDaniels, the prototypical two-way player. But the only thing we're talking about is the fact that the Lakers and this flawed roster lost. And I won't go on for too long, Ski, but, you know, people say, what's to blame? What's to blame? You know what I'm blaming? That little string of success they had on their home court, because they weren't even that good on the road, after the Luka trade, which kind of convinced us all that this team really should have been a championship contender. When you go back to look at what we all said the day after the trade, nobody thought this team was going to compete because they don't have the athleticism and they don't have the size. Ski, let's just start with you. You're a Lakers fan. I know this hits close to your heart, but we appreciate you coming on here and talking about this. What did you think of the Lakers' loss and the way that myself and the rest of the media are handling it?
It's how it is, man, when you're one of the top dogs, man. When you got all the championships, everybody wants you to lose. And I understand. I get it. I've had to deal with this forever, and it's not new. So I get it. I'm not one to run away whenever the Lakers lose or whenever I lose. So, yeah, I'm right here. What I think happened, I don't know if I agree with, you know, that we were fooled because they were playing well. I think that we underestimated, or maybe I'll speak for myself. I underestimated J.J. Redick as a first-year head coach. I mean, he's made a lot of good decisions throughout the regular season, but it's a whole different story coaching the regular season versus the playoffs. So experience there, I mean, I feel like a couple games were won just with that. Besides that, I think, honestly, this honest opinion, I think the Lakers could beat a lot of teams in the West, but they can't beat the teams that have so much size when they don't have a center they can trust. Like, you saw the Lakers try to make the move for Mark Williams because they know they need a big man, and now you're going up against Rudy Gobert, Naz Reid, Julius Randle. And I got to give Julius Randle credit because he's somebody that I shit on all the time because he's worthy of it usually, but he bought out in his first round in this series. He's a big part of the reason why they won. So if he's playing like that and, you know, they have a size advantage versus most teams, I can understand why they won and they can continue winning.
I'll be interested to see where the Lakers go. I think the bigs, to me, big men are almost like running backs in the NFL. It's usually pretty plentiful and you can usually get them at a good cost. I think they're going to be able to address that. Still a little bit of worried about the athleticism, and they don't really have a lot to work with. You know, Austin Reeves is a great story. And, you know, going into the playoffs, everyone's telling me he's the best number three guy. Pretty good on offense. Got shut down during the playoffs and still a defensive liability as well. So to me, Ski, to get for this team to become a contender, you got to add some more pieces there as far as depth and athleticism. What do you think? What's on your wish list as far as, you know, besides the big man for the offseason?
Wing defenders.
Right. I mean, but every team's looking for that, right? There's no team outside of Oklahoma City or maybe Boston that's not like, we need more wings, right? Even as a Kings fan, right? That's what I'm looking for, too. I've been looking for it for the last 10 years. So that's a tougher market than the big man, right? Where I think the big man, you're going to be able to find someone. It might be Brook Lopez. It might be, you know, but there's usually a good free agent big man. Five Star, what did you think about the Lakers loss? And what do you think about the Timberwolves moving forward?
Well, you know, I was one of the few people who took the Timberwolves to win the series. The numbers showed you. I mean, with all of the hype that the Lakers were getting, once again, media-driven, and people get mad at me because they think that, oh, Five Star has favorites. He likes this guy. He likes that. Because when I really believe in someone, I pound the table for him. And the reason why is because I believe in my ability to scout, you know, athletes. And you guys both know that I spend probably more time than anybody in the world watching sports. This is what I do. I take it very seriously. And if I put my money up, it's a reason. I believe in it, and I've studied these teams and these players. And I've seen the Lakers and the T-Wolves a lot, not only this year, but the past couple years with all of the different parts, even though it was different parts now in L.A. I more than know about Luka from his years in Dallas. I know a lot about, you know, Austin Reeves going all the way back, man, to Wichita State. I watched him there when he was a freshman and saw him transfer to Oklahoma. So people don't understand the amount of data that I've, you know, accumulated over the years watching these players because I bet so much college sports and I bet Euro and saw Luka at Madrid and all that stuff. And one thing that I can say is I knew that the Lakers were media driven and that the books were telling you what was the real deal about them by the first game being only 4 points, by the spread of the series being as low as it was. All you had to do was look at basketball. You got the better coach in Chris Finch by a mile against J.J. because J.J. is way behind the ears. He's a rookie coach. Not only is he a rookie coach, he's a little bit arrogant, and he needed humbling. The way he talked about Shedeur needed humbling. J.J. the same way. He's one of those guys who always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. So we had that factor, and then we had the best player in the series on the T-Wolves. Like, we all know people love Luka. He's a great scoring machine, very crafty, one of the most talented offensive players we've seen. But what does he do defensively? Like, he's always a liability. And the thing about basketball is it isn't like football. You don't just get paid for playing offense. You got to play both sides. And that's why I always ranked and above Luka as the top player in the world, in my opinion, and above Jokic, because when Ant wants to turn up defensively, he can take any player in the world, play them 48 feet, get on them and get them under their skin. We've seen them do it to everyone from Steph Curry to LeBron to KD to Bradley Beal, you know, to Booker. He's gotten under all their skin. He's not afraid to guard anyone. He's ready to match his athleticism and his tenacity up with anyone in the world, and that's what separates him from Luka. And that's why I took the T-Wolves, and I thought that it was a pretty easy bet. I didn't know that they were going to get him at five. I thought it would be six. He did the five, I think, just to mess with Shannon Sharpe and all the people who love to say Lakers in five. But we talked about it before the series on the show. Ant is an OG killer. He's one of those guys like Kobe was when he was young, like Allen Iverson was when he was young. They're hunting the big names because they understand that if I beat this guy, I can make a name for myself. You know, Ant's just a really solid player on his way to being the face of the league. I don't know if they allow him to stay in Minnesota. All our talent right now is in all the small market teams. OKC, Minnesota, probably the best two players in the league. As far as in moving forward for the Lakers, first of all, what is LeBron going to do? LeBron ticks me off with little stuff like he just did. I love him as a father, great dude, great husband, does a lot, does the schools and things. But on the court, he's always been so whiny to me, and that's what bothers me. And he does little passive-aggressive stuff that pisses me off, just like this interview. They ask him what changes he want to make to the roster, and he says, last guy, my boy AD. Now all of a sudden it's my boy AD, but y'all just saw each other in Dallas, and you could tell it was a little, you know, icy between them with their relationship. But now in this interview, after you guys get knocked out, it's my boy AD got shipped out of here for talking about the roster. Hey, I know, like, Lakers fans, Ski, bring in Ski real quick. Ski, I know that type of stuff ticks you off. That's not Laker-type basketball. I'm a guy who's respected the Lakers since the organization came about because they always had winners like Magic, like Kobe, like Kareem, like Shaq, guys who really came to represent the franchise well. And, man, I know LeBron is good, and I know he has a lot of fans, as he should, because he has so much longevity, done so much for the game. But when he does little stuff like that, man, he ticks me off. Were you bothered by that comment as much as I was about him trying to say Ant, like he didn't know what was going on, even though he owns Clutch?
I mean, I'm not surprised by anything LeBron does. I mean, I've seen him do the same things throughout his career on different teams. I'm not a LeBron fan. You know, I respect him for what he's done for the game and, you know, winning a championship on the Lakers, but he does a lot of stuff to piss me off. I'll be on here talking forever if I just got to name them all. So I do want to give you pushback on one thing, though. I love Ant. He's one of my favorite players, but I still don't think he's better than Luka. I mean, and you talk about the defensive side. I'll just look at, I mean, what the Mavericks won last year. Luka had 30-plus every single game except the one game they lost. Mavs won in five. So I just think that the matchup this year favored the Timberwolves.
I'm personally shocked that you said that, Ski, because when you're looking at the way that teams are approaching the Lakers, to me, you can't be the best guy on your team when you're getting hunted.
So then answer hunted. This question. How do you win?
W2W, Ski.
How do you win? How do the Mavericks win in five if he can't defend anybody? How did they win at five?
Look at the team they had last year, though, Ski. Nico Harrison did an excellent job of putting a bunch of dogs around him who covered up his deficiencies.
So that's the part. You can win with a guy like that. You just have to have the right team around him.
He's better offensively than Anthony. No, you can't say he's a better all-around player, Ski.
Listen, if you ask me who I like more, I like Anthony Edwards more. If you ask me who I think is better, I think Luka is better. That just is what it is.
Player?
I think Luka offensively is better than so much better than Ant. Ant's defense is not crazy where he's just going out there stopping people. Like, I don't rate his defense that high to where it matters that much.
When he wants to ski, he can stop anybody, though. That's the thing. You remember how, like, the same way, like, when you got greats like LeBron, Kobe, Jordan, when they get it on their mind and like, man, I'm about to take you out. He can do it, man. We've seen it.
He definitely has potential to do that. Definitely. Yeah.
He's a young boy, though. I know what you're saying. Give him some time. Luka has performed on the world stage for a long time. I still say check his birth certificate because I don't think Luka is 25, man. If he is, man, he better lay off McDonald's and beer because he was looking slim when he first got to L.A. Remember, guys, when he got off the plane? Now look how he's ballooned up already. We know you from LA, Ski, and I live there. The food's not that good in LA. You got to eat like healthy in LA. It's not a lot of
stuff. He might be eating that Mexican food or something.
Yeah, he doing something, because if you go to McDonald's in LA, it's like a sign it up like this food will kill you. Like, so pull up to try to keep you from eating it, man. That's always been fun to me. But last thing about the Lakers is, remember the great Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, said he loved James Harden, but he told James Harden, you can't win playing that style of ball. Because the reason why he said that wasn't saying that he wasn't a phenomenal player. He's talking about usage, man. You can't play both sides of the ball with that much ISO, that much pounding the ball. And that's what Luka's going through. And I thought JJ would be smart enough to implement him in the offense, run the offense, and get him off the ball, use him in LeBron. But it just turned to Dallas again, man. He just pounding the ball, being White Harden, just by himself.
Well, I'm not sure if he can be that good off the ball. I think that's what the problem is. Like, the times where we've seen him off the ball, just
he can't catch a shoot for some reason, right? He a rhythm shooter. He got to bounce to shoot, right?
Yeah, so I think that's what it is. And if all three of them are going to work together, like him, Reeves, and LeBron, we kind of got to figure that out. So
you believe in Reeves?
I like Reeves. Reeves was looking like D'Lo in the playoffs this year. So I'm not mad if they get rid of him for the right person. But I still think Reeves is good. He pissed me off.
He's good. I think he's the great sell high candidate, because like I talked about, with the way that the salary cap works now, and you got LeBron, and like, let's just assume he's going to take his player option. I mean, you don't know how much I would love for him to just go off into the sunset, because you know what's crazy?
Brad, he's not doing that. You know that.
I know. I already know.
He wants.
But I was. I always tell people,
rocket chair. He want all that.
For someone who's like as a great a human being as he is, it's crazy that he's so unpopular, right? And it's not, he doesn't do anything wrong off the court. He might cheat on his wife, but we don't know about it.
Fred, no domestic violence. On, Fred, no.
I'm just saying, he's not out here with no, like, man, 20 girls.
No, man. Bro, they cheat on his wife.
Right? It's not like Tiger Woods, right? When that came out, I mean, that was like a big deal, like a reason no, for man. American.
No, man. I've been broad before. Bro, they cheat on his wife. I've been broad at Live with my homeboy Rashard Lewis. He was up there with a do-rag on and some shorts, man, in the back chilling, like just, you know, just watching.
Really? No, he's not like no John Moran action there.
Nah, I don't think bro doing that, man.
All right. But my point is for an eminently good person, he should be way more popular.
No. He is popular.
That speaks to the way he carries himself.
Man, he forced his narrative. People can see through fake stuff. It wasn't organic. He was doing too much forcing stuff, man.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, too. And, I mean, most recently, you know, I've never been a big fan of him. But when he went on and he disrespected the greats of the past and said Giannis would have scored 250 in the 70s, like, you got to be kidding me. What other sport does that? You never hear Barry Bonds going, Willie Mays sucked. He couldn't have played in this era. You don't hear Tom Brady going, Joe Montana sucked. Walter Payton sucked, right? But I don't, and it goes both ways, because we already talked about Shaq last week, and I know Ski kind of gave him some support, but I'm sick of listening to him complain about today's game. It's not as bad as he says.
Braun started that era versus era stuff, and the reason why is because Jordan didn't like him. When they tried to kind of link up, Jordan learned to respect Kobe. At first, he was just a little pissed to him, but he learned to respect him. He never liked Braun. He felt like Braun was shady and do passive-aggressive shit, and ain't really two-faced. So he didn't like him. And so when he found out that him and MJ weren't going to ever have a cool connection, he started making it his thing, like with his media friends, to compare. And I'm the greatest. Remember, he came on after the Golden State and made the little thing on the barbershop. It's just a bunch of BS. It really don't matter, because it ain't like they could ever play each other, man. You know, they Grok, I guess you could put them together on Grok. You know, Grok, what Grok just said, we aren't too bad on the show. Grok just said they ran all the quarterbacks, right? And then we're going to get to the great win by Ski, great call on the Knicks. They ran all the rookie quarterbacks, guys, through Grok to see how their careers were going to end out. Everybody's was real pretty good, you know. What's his name? Cam Ward was really good. They said he was going to go to a couple Pro Bowls. Guess what they said about Shedeur Sanders through Grok? They said Lindor will have a 15-year career. He'll be a Hall of Famer, multiple MVP awards, win 3 Super Bowls, and have a net worth over $1 billion. So we are too bad with Gronk kind of agrees with us. So AI, the highest computer in the world.
I don't know if he's going to be that good.
That's what they're saying, man. They see what we see. So we'll see. All right, let's get to the next series.
All right, let's talk about it. Ski, I got to give you props, man. I should have just – you know what? I realized in the playoffs and with my extra commute, I'd be overthinking this stuff. Because we went on here and I said, oh, right? Knicks, they're too much experience, right? But what did I do in game 6? I go, Pittsburgh's got to win at least one game at home, right? This thing's going 7, blah, 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 blah. And the experience was the difference last night. The experience was the difference. And you know, we talk about dialing it up on the defensive end. And I felt that we saw that from the big wing trio of Hart, Anunoby, and Bridges. They weren't given any quarter. They were up everybody, picking people up right at half court. No easy dribbles. And, you know, we really got to give credit to the Knicks here. So, and I want to give credit to you. Great call. And you had to be sweating, right? 112-105. Yeah. I thought I was going to cash it. I thought we were going game 7 Saturday, doubleheader game 7s. Let's go. Nope. Only one game on Saturday. What'd you see in that one?
Well, I mean, we saw Jalen Brunson be, you know, the Jalen Brunson we know is in the playoff. He's been torching the Pistons. I expected him to do it all series long, and he showed up when it matters most. So wasn't too surprised by that. Cade, as much as I love him as a player, you know, probably my favorite player out the whole series, you know, like the experience factor. You can't ignore that. So Pistons in a couple years, will they be able to compete? And, you know, is Detroit back? I think yes, as long as they keep him around. But we saw what we expected. It was closer games. Like I said that the first game will be a blowout, and after that, it'll be closer. But I didn't expect the Knicks to struggle this much with the Pistons. So what I learned from this series is the Knicks are not as good as I, you know, might have thought earlier. But why I took this, I mean, yes, we said the experience, and I saw it last year in the playoffs. I was so mad at myself. I looked at Knicks -1.5 in the first round, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to take it. And then by game 4, I'm like, damn, I left that money on the table. So I jumped on it this year.
All right. Final question for you on the Pistons, Ski. On my other show with Tyler, I know you met Tyler. I said, boy, if Jaden Ivey comes back healthy, that's the second ball creator there to take some pressure off Cade in the half-court setting. And you know, Duren improves. Thompson improves. Cade improves. This team doesn't need to make a lot of moves. They can take the patient approach. He's a little skeptical that Jaden could be that number 2. I'm team Jaden Ivey. What do you think Detroit needs to do? Do they just run it back and hope to get a healthy Ivey and have these guys improve? Or do you think they need to be a little more aggressive this offseason?
Well, I like Ivy's game. I really do. I think he's a good player, but I worry about him just because of the injury that he had. And I feel like a lot of his game relies on athleticism. So that's the one thing that holds me up. I still want to see if he can have success, but I still think you make a move and, you know, add another piece, because we've seen Detroit can compete. I mean, they just flipped from one of the worst teams last year to making the playoffs, pushing it to a 6-game series in the first round. I think if you make one more move, you know, especially with guys around them getting older and older, I think you have to do it.
All right. What did you see in that series, 5-star? And we'll do a quick preview, and I'll ask you too, because I kind of agree. Like, as great as a win it was for New York, didn't really get me too motivated that we're going to see a all-time classic when they take on Boston in the next round. What do you think, 5-star?
We just got by the skin of our teeth yesterday with that half-court shot by Malik Beasley. We won the first half money line of pitches, so I was glad about that. And Malik Beasley giveth and he taketh away, because he fumbled away an opportunity to tie the ball game late. But after I found out, I forgot this. He had a -1.5, so I was really happy my homeboy cashed after the Knicks were able to get it done. great job of going to Detroit. And, you know, that Detroit fan base is really, really hungry for a victory at home, and they were able to go cut their hearts out, man. Just a great job by the Knicks. Goody performance. Jalen Brunson, he's always banged up. He's always hurt, you know, small guy, overuses the plays, a little physical. But it's okay. You know, the Knicks move on, and they have a really strong fan base. Detroit, I kind of keep up with them because they're kind of like Houston's stepbrother, I guess, because Oscar's over there. So Houston fans, we tend to watch them because they're kind of like on the same timeline as us, because you got Jalen, you got drafted with Cade, and you always comparing those two. You got Oscar and Amir. And I knew Amir was going to have a big game, last game like he did, because he likes to prove to Oscar that he's the big bro. So Oscar had a good game, the final game. But I just like everywhere where the Pistons are going as a franchise. They're going to probably have to move off of J.B. Bickerstaff sooner or later. He probably is there next year. But to get to where they want to be, I don't know if he's the guy, man. He's a little bit too emotional, too much of a hothead. And we saw him do the same thing with Cleveland. After a while, it rubs players off. Initially, it gets them to, you know, play well. And he's been around the league his whole life because his father was a great coach. So he knows the league, and he teaches them to be pros. But then his voice kind of grows stale. So be on the lookout for Mike Malone in a couple years going to Detroit if he's not hired this summer.
All right.
Hey, the nice twin guy broke off something crucial at the end of that last game.
Who, that Oscar?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, that was a hell of a – oh, my goodness. Brunson, that's going to go down in New York history. Lord, that's a great move he put on. And then sunk it. You got to make it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If he didn't make it, it wouldn't have been as effective.
All right. You know what? I see on the profile or on our script a little later, we'll discuss the upcoming series. We'll table that for later, and we can do it at the same time we talk about the Cavs and the Pacers. Okay. Let's move to tonight, Ski, and I'm going to start with you. I'll admit I missed it this morning. I missed ahead of the spread, so this is going to be all new information for me. Warriors taking on the Rockets. The line is 5.5. Boy, I should have hit it right at the opener. It was 4.5. I'm all over Golden State here, and we saw this a couple years ago with the Warriors where they, you know, whooped that trick. They tricked off the Game 5 in Memphis, right? And they did the very same thing in Houston. Going home to win it, Chase Center, feels like a blowout to me, but who knows here. The Warriors were able to win both games so far in San Francisco. What do you think is going to happen tonight, Ski?
Yeah, I didn't even there was no ahead of the spread last night, so didn't even get a chance to talk.
Oh, that's why I missed it? I was wondering why I didn't get recommended in my YouTube feed. Okay, well, now I don't feel so guilty.
Yeah. How I feel about this one? I do think, the last one was a desperation spot for the Rockets. They came out playing with their, you know, heads on fire. Golden State didn't come to play, I guess I'll just say like that. I don't think you'll see that again in this next game. I think that Golden State is a team that actually throws the first punch here. I'm looking towards them in the first quarter. I don't really want to lay 5.5 because I think they can win, but it don't mean I think Houston won't fight. So I think Golden State early is the best look. After you got beat on the way you did, you come out in front of your home crowd and throw that first punch. So that's how I'm looking at this game.
All right, 5-star. This is your team here. I hate to back Golden State here. Do you think I'm making a mistake?
I mean, why wouldn't you? You got Steph Curry, all-time great. Jimmy Butler, closeout game. Steve Curry, he's cried to the refs, so he's going to be getting some whistles. They're not going to be able to really touch Curry like before. You saw Curry did the Phil Jackson move and went boo-hooed all press about, oh, they're hitting Steph's hand. Come on, man. Get the hell out of here. Especially after we saw, as a Rockets fan, the way that they did James Harden's left shooting hand when he got hurt, the Warriors. And, you know, you got Jimmy Butler choking people. You got, you know, Draymond just pretty much doing whatever the hell he wants to do on the court. So the NBA is pretty much telling you, I don't think they're going to let my kids win it this year. It's just a time to learn, you know. So I wouldn't lay points, though. I'm with Ski on that. I think that the Rockets have a lot of fight, and I think the Rockets are a better team. The problem is they just don't have the closing ability yet, and that's what this whole playoffs is about, is learning that. Shout out to my guy, Texas commentator, for this shirt, 281. You know, that's the alternate area code in Houston. 713 is the main one. It's 281 is the other. You see my guy, Alpha Sagoon, and my guy, Amin Thompson, the two dogs of the team, because Jalen is still a pup. I had to represent the dogs today, man. Shout out to Texas commentator. You might see him on his Houston Stressing on X. He comes on the show and talks Texans football with us. I'm sure we'll have him back on before the football season begins. But thank you for the shirt, man. I appreciate you sending it out to Vegas to me. But yeah, you know, I won't be involved. I'll just have Ian by my side, Ski, trying to
be in this spot. You got a chance.
Yeah, I got a chance with Ian there, so I will be trying to jank one. But honestly, the Rockets lost their opportunity when they blew the game in San Francisco the prior game. That was their chance, man. They should have got back the series where it was even, and they were going to have a game 7 in Houston, and then anything could have went. Because the longer the series goes, benefits Houston, man. We're seeing all of these older stars. We forget because how good they are that they're old, man. Like, J.J. Redick damn near needs to be fined for what he did to LeBron. You let this man play the whole second half. Yeah. You know, so he's wearing out. We're seeing Harden wearing down. Skid texted me the other day, like, man, I'm tired of Harden. I can't. Game 5 is because he gets tired, man. He old. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's older now, bro. He's old. You saw Steph. Steph has not looked good the last two games. That's why I know he's going to probably come out looking crazy this game, because he's looked horrible the last two games, bro. Like, no type of energy, kind of dragging. He had all his energy for game 1 because he knew they needed that first game. And at their age, they have to kind of pace themselves. But what I can tell you is the Rockets have showed people how to beat the Warriors. You remember early in the year, I said that I like the Warriors coming out the West, and other people like the Lakers. And I put a ticket in on the Warriors. I'm going to have to start hedging it after this series because I don't feel too good about the Warriors. They don't just – they're missing some, man. And I think the age of Butler, the age of Curry, and Draymond just is getting on everybody's nerves, man. And I think the Rockets have showed with the double bigs how you can beat them. So who would they play next?
Timberwolves. Timberwolves is next.
Yeah, T-Wolves might beat them in 5 or 6, man, because they're going to have hell dealing with Rudy.
Gobert.
Yeah. And Randle, they should be doing the same thing the Rockets were doing, just throwing it off the glass, you know, and it's just easy cleanup because the Warriors are light in the ass, man. They're small. So, and they have to have 30 from Steph to win, bro, especially with Butler getting injured like he did. And Steph just can't give you 35 a night against teams like the Rockets and the Timberwolves and OKC, who play aggressive defense and have all these multiple 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", wings to shoot at you and wear them down. So I'm not looking for the Warriors to go far after this series, but I do think that they most likely do end my young guys' season. But if they do, man, great job by the Rockets. I'm not disappointed at all. We went farther than I could expect, and I cashed so many tickets on them on the over totals for the wins, for going to the playoffs, and the future's really bright. Just stay packed. You know, my dream scenario was cut Fred VanVleet. They have a team option on them, sign Harden, because Harden should be leaving the Clippers after they lose to the Nuggets in the series, if they lose to him. But now if they win Saturday, and I think they might, then he's going to stay in L.A. And get the max contract over there from Ballmer. Then I would think that the Rockets should probably explore. If you're going to trade, not only trade VanVleet, sign and trade. Do not trade into the court. Even Cam Whitmore needs to stay. Keep these guys together.
You don't want James Harden, dude. It's time to go big buck hunting.
All right, man. We don't want
you. You gotta go for the big game.
Nah, I don't like
Giannis is out there, and you guys can offer the very best package.
Give up to get Giannis. Hell no. I don't want to give up our men or Jalen for Giannis. No.
I would. Well, Jalen, I would. I'd
give up them fingernails in a heartbeat, bro. In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Bro, Jalen's going to end up just being a six man to me. He's got Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams written all over. Just let me come in, score 28, but if you don't have it.
I watch him, man. He wants to be good, and he has a really aggressive side. It's just he gets into these lulls, and when he gets into them, he's out of there. But it's times, man, I watch him. It's times he looks like the best guy on the court. You know, against some really good teams. I've seen him look like that against OKC before. I've seen him look like that against the Lakers before. So I've seen him look like that against the Warriors before as well. So I just want to be patient with him because he's 23, man. You know, it'd be different if he was like 28 doing this shit. He's 23 years old, bro. This is his first playoff run right here. Let's see next year if he can develop some consistency, because we already got him signed. Why we want to bring in Giannis? Now, what people don't realize, because
he's the top three player in the league and you guys would win the championship.
Okay, but that don't matter, Spread. What sometimes people don't understand is chemistry, man. You bringing in a big personality into your locker room, and Giannis is an asshole.
But we haven't heard anything bad about him being as a teammate. All his teammates love him.
No, yeah, you do, man. Please, he done punched a couple of those little white dudes in the eye of practice. Stop it, man.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm gonna quote my guy one time.
He's punched a couple dudes in the eye, bro, with the Bucks, and he can't come over there with that
Jordan
with the Rockets.
Six rings.
I'm gonna quote my guy.
Those little white guys might end up coaching. For getting four more rings.
If I wanted between KD and Giannis, I'd want Giannis, but I really don't want either. You know, but
I wouldn't want KD. I wouldn't want Harden. I want someone that fits your
Harden
timeline.
Harden would be perfect for a spread. He wouldn't have to play many minutes, man. He'll just have to.
Yeah, but just that these playoff disappearances, and we'll get into that
we
a
don't
little
need
more,
him to
man.
Appear. Situationally, he would be able to, with the team we already have, he would get going a bunch of easy looks, man. That's all I'm worried about, his ability to facilitate and be smart with his IQ to get us in situations where we get good shots instead of being Fred Van Fleet dribbling till there's 5 seconds left and launching a damn fadeaway three at 5'10", bro. You know, like, I don't want that, but I do want the team to stay together. I do not want any of these guys. KD, for people who are watching, we got to speed up a little bit. KD, we don't want them Rockets fans. And the reason we don't is because Ime Udoka does not coach offense well. He's going to make him break down. He's going to be playing one-on-one, and he's going to be hurt most of the year because it's too much usage. KD will be best somewhere where he has a playmaker beside him where he can catch a shoot.
Where would he even be good? Like, where does he even move the needle at this point? Is he 38 years old?
With Dallas, he'll be shit. He'll be the shit with Dallas right now if Kyrie come back healthy.
That's a big if. And that's if Anthony Davis stays healthy. I mean,
I'm just saying, I'm not counting on that.
This
is where he can just catch it. Because one thing about KD, the difference between him, he can catch and shoot. And at his age, he needs to become more of that type of player, Ray Allen type. He always gets hurt trying to cross you over, man. Your limbs are like 7 feet long, and you doing all these crosses. You know, KD is trying to make moves and break his knee and shit. So. Yeah,
to me, KD is going to come down as the guy that just didn't understand free agency. Every time he goes to a new team, he makes them trade all the people that he should be playing with in order to get him. Like, bro, why don't you just let your contract expire? You could have gone to Phoenix. You wait 1 year, go to Phoenix. They would have still had Bridges. They would have still had Cam Johnson. Every time some team trades for KD, they give away everything that we'd want to see.
That's why we're not going to do it. But I
don't think you will. I think Stone's too smart.
Yeah, we.
I think at this point, KD's like one first rounder and one good young player. You don't break the bank for him anymore. What are you getting?
A lot of people forget those spread, and then we'll move on to the next game. The Nets almost did it, but the basketball guys didn't want them to because it would have showed that you don't need to go the old school way of building a team with the coach and all of that. Mm-hmm. Remember the Steve Nash coach team, and it was Kyrie, it was Harden, it was KD. Harden was playing phenomenal, KD was playing phenomenal, and KD was so damn tired, he tried to step behind the three-point line against the Bucks and end the series. He made the shot, but his foot was on the line. They went to OT, they lost in OT. And that team never was the same.
I remember that because I had so many Milwaukee futures that year. And
the Nets
would have
won
the victory lap
them.
They would have won. I couldn't even victory lap them. I was like embarrassed spending the money.
I got five or six words for this one.
What though?
I got five or six words, and then that's all I got.
Take your time, Steve.
Quote unquote, grown men versus painted fingernails. That's all I got.
All right, Ski, not a fan of Caleb Williams either. But Ski, I want to hear your thoughts. And you know, it's so funny. I don't understand why you guys hate the Clippers. You know, growing up, I didn't know anyone who hated the Chicago Cubs because the Cubs never knocked anyone out of the playoffs. They never beat anybody. Right? Who could hate the Cubs, right? All they did was lose to your favorite team. I feel the same way with the Clippers. Why do you guys even bother hating them? What do they ever do? Like, what do
the
they
Clippers?
Ever do?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you right now.
What do the they Clippers, do? Just be in your problem, city? Just exist?
The problem was the fans. When the Clippers started doing that during that Lob City era, they started acting like they was running L.A. just because the Lakers had a down year or two. Like, they was acting like they was really good and winning. Like, the Lakers were the little brother. We ain't going for that. So, After that, it's like we ain't messing.
And all my Lakers fan friends hate the Clippers, and I'm just like, why? Like, what do they do? Like, they're not even a threat.
I don't know anybody from LA who like the Clippers. Like, I know a lot of people from LA. I got family in Inglewood. Yeah. I got family all over LA, and I used to live there. I never met anyone who was like, I'm a Clippers fan.
Yeah. And hey, if it wasn't for Ski, we wouldn't know any Chargers fans either. But enough about that. Talk to me about how to bet this series, because it's another one I struggled with. I'll admit, I did get last night. No, never mind. I've actually done okay on this series. The only one I missed was, what was the blowout game? Game 3. I think I took the points in game 3. It was a +6, and they lost by a bunch. Anyways, we're on to game 7. Barely covered last night. That was a lucky cover, I'll be honest. And now we're in game 7, and I've flip-flopped. And if you watch me on NBA Rundown, I've said the Clippers are going to win, the Nuggets are going to win, the Clippers are going to win. Now I'm back on the Nuggets. It's in Denver. And at the end of the day, I just think Jokic and Murray, it's just going to be too much. And this Clippers team, I mean, hey, you know, they looked pretty good last night. Let's see them do it again in Denver. What do you think, Ski? How are you approaching this game 7 taking place in Denver on Saturday night?
It's tough. The first thing I'll mention before I forget is, you know, game 7s, a lot of times we think, you know, mostly are unders, and it is kind of true, but that's later in the playoffs. This is still the first round. Guys still have a lot of energy. They haven't been battling. So I think the total could be a little bit low. We saw in that last game. I mean,
what is it right now? Let me pull it up right now.
It opened 204.5. It's 205.5 now. But that last game, I mean, every chance the Clippers got, they were running. Like, they were trying their hardest to get out and run. And I think Denver is going to do the same. So I'm thinking over, and that one is the way to go. As far as the side, I'm sorry, man. I just, like, I need the Clippers to win, but I'm not putting no extra money on it, because the one thing I forgot to think about, I'm not betting on James Harden after game 5. I'm sorry. I'm just not doing it. Yeah. I've seen it too many times. And going up against Joker at home, I'm not going to feel smart if I make that wager. So it's over, nothing for me.
5-star, it's time for your guy, man. It's time. We've talked about redemptions in this playoffs. Rudy, redemption. Randall, redemption. Is this Harden's time? Is Harden going to come through? Because, hey, right? And Ski's done the same thing. We both came on and said, we can't bet on a team with Julius Randle, right? How could you win with Julius Randle, right? And now we're all doing the same thing with James Harden. And we're not the only ones. Like, I listen to the Ringer podcast, and, you know, Zach Lowe does it, Bill Simmons does it, all these guys do it. Harden's got a real chance here to kind of change the narrative. And we saw the same thing with John Elway. He couldn't win the big one until he did. And then now he's, you know, greatest quarterback of that generation. What do you think? Is it time? Will Harden get his respect? Will the Clippers get the win in Denver tomorrow night?
Speaking of Elway, you heard about what happened to him. Oh, my God. What a terrible accident. He was on a golf
course. Yeah, I was sad.
Part of something, and his agent fell off the back, man, and hit his head and passed away. So, man, tough situation right there. Praying for everyone involved in that really sad situation. I'm going with the Clippers. I'm not going to make this about Harden. Harden is just a facilitator and the second best player on his team. It's about Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard's pretty good in closeout games. So we all can agree the Clippers have a better roster than the Nuggets have. The Nuggets are missing some pieces. They got to rely on Westbrook to be their third guy behind Murray and Jokic. And these type of situations, you talk about Harden, I'm not trusting Westbrook. And I'm not trusting,
right?
I'm not trusting also Baby Adelman, the Nuggets' new head coach, against my boy. You know, I feel like my boy Ty is going to come through. Think that he'll have something drawn up. And it's not like the Clippers have not been to Denver and won before. So I think that they can get it done. And I think the books are showing you with the number being so low. Anytime we get a short number with the plus money, you know, it's a really high rate of it hitting with that +1, +1.5, +2. So I'd definitely be leaning toward the Clippers on this game. Of course, we'll wait to get a little bit more information because it's tomorrow. But for me, just off of viewing everything, I like the Clippers in this matchup.
All right, we're going to be opposite there. I think I'll be think I'll be jumping in on Denver, but you know, I don't necessarily love it. Anything can go either way. My final thought on that series is one thing that's interesting. We talk about what the books do. The series closed at minus 120, and now basically the series is online. You get Clippers for plus 110. Maybe a little bit of value there when you think about it from that perspective, because it's not like a lot of things have changed. It's been a close series. I wrote in game three, I said, this series is going seven, you know, when I wrote about this series. So not necessarily that surprised. Now let's move to Sunday, and we'll kind of combine the games and the series. Five Star, let's start with you this one. We've been starting with Ski the whole time. Let's start with you here. The Pacers are taking on the Cavaliers. Cavaliers are catching eight. Pacers are catching eight. Cavaliers are laying eight. My original instinct when that line came out was that it was too many points. But I started thinking, man, this is a team that just embarrassed the Miami Heat. They had the biggest margin of victory in a first-round playoff series in the history of the game. They won by 51. I mean, the great thing about that is I got to get some extra sleep that night because that game was so boring. It wasn't even worth watching. So we have a team. I mean, maybe you argue, hey, it proves the Heat shouldn't be there. Or the other statement is Cavaliers are simply that good. So I was shocked by this line, and we'll get into it a little more when we get to the Celtics line because that's even crazier to me. But Cavs are also minus 500 to win this series. Both of these seem too rich, but I'm also worried, man, am I just throwing out everything I've seen this regular season with the Cavs being one of the most dominant teams, the Cavs having the top scoring offense in the team, not to mention a very versatile defense. They got defenders at all places. They got size. They got defense. They got rebounding. They got everything that we say you need to win a championship. How do we approach this one, and what do you think of this game one line of +8, Five Star?
I like the Pacers, actually, in this one. I think that the Pacers have quietly went about their business. Like, last year, no one paid attention when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think that they took that L and, like, got back together as a team. They brought back every part of the team. No new acquisitions. Didn't let anyone go in free agency and just said, hey, man, let's run it back. We know what the mission. We're one step from getting to the finals last year. Let's do it again. And I think that they're the perfect team to actually match up with Cleveland because they threaten you at so many different positions. And they also have multiple lengthy defenders to send at Donovan Mitchell and at Darius Garland, two undersized guards. And Mitchell is one of the best playoff performers we've seen. He was the same way at Utah. He always steps his game up. We know he can play. But I just think that the Cavs are a regular season team. I always said that all year. I think they had a really good year, but I don't think that they should be as dominating a favorite as they are in this series by the books. So I'm going to take advantage of it. I'm going with the Pacers for sure, +8 in that first game, just because what you said, everyone's going to be riding the Cavs. And, like, man, you know, everyone looks at the Pacers as kind of a weak team because they don't have any stars. Their star is Halliburton. And we saw by the poll by the NBA players what people think about him. He's not a really likable character. So because of that, people dislike the team and they don't take him seriously. But he's a gold medal guy, made the Olympics, you know, and he's been a really good pro. So I like Halliburton. I liked him at Iowa State. And I think that he's a good leader for this team. Most of all, I like Rick Carlisle. I think that he's a really good coach. We're going to see if Cleveland's coach, how he does now, he's, you know, second round of his first time as a head coach. In the playoffs, I just like experience when it comes to these type of things. And I think Pacers are really undervalued here. So I'll be definitely playing Pacers +2.5, minus 130 for the series. I think that they can definitely win two games.
Yeah, I mean, I might be in the minority. I actually like Halliburton. Maybe that's because he came to Sacramento and actually wanted to be here. and I still think we're going to regret that trade as Domantas Sabonis probably has 1 or 2 years left in it.
It's crazy because remember when that happened, we said they should have chose Halliburton and sent away Fox, and now they ended up sending away both of them.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, just we're just a poster of how to mismanage your franchise. Ski, I have a feeling, though, you're probably not as big a Halliburton fan as I am. What are your thoughts on this series? Pacers +380, Pacers +8. Are these lines correct? Did the books do a good job here, Ski?
I like Halliburton as an underdog. He made me a lot of money. I don't really like Halliburton as a front runner. I don't like nobody as a front runner. So that's the knock I have on Halliburton. But we're here to talk about who can win or cover games, not who we like, I guess. So Cavaliers, I think I agree that I'm not as high on them as everybody else. Like, yeah, they had a good regular season. You know, I've seen the Cavs plenty of times have a good regular season and just look terrible in the playoffs. The team hasn't changed that much. It's not a team that prevents too many challenges or that presents too many challenges for this Pacers team. But on the other side, the Pacers, I mean, I feel like they proved themselves kind of last year, even though that last series in the Eastern Conference Finals ended 4-0, like Pacers could have very easily won a couple of those games. And they were very close games. I don't think this Cleveland team is better than the Celtics. So I really feel like the Pacers can compete. The way the style of basketball that they play is just difficult to defend. Every chance they get, they're going to run. And no matter how good of a defensive team you are, it's tough to play against that. So seeing 8 points, I mean, that seems pretty rich. That seems like way too much in my opinion. And I agree. I looked at that plus 2.5 games or as well for the series.
All right. Sounds like you know, we all think the Cavaliers are going to advance, but the Pacers aren't getting enough respect and probably some value on them here. Is there any reason we should take the plus 380?
Yeah, I'm about to say, wait a minute, bro.
You think the Pacers, you're going to take the plus 380?
I think they can win. I think the odds, the chances versus the odds, like, they have a way better chance than that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, well, minus 500, which is what the Cavaliers are set at. Like, off the top of my head, what is that? You win 82% of the time or something? So, yeah, I mean, you're basically saying they can win more than 18% of the time. I'm fine with that.
That's how I feel, bro.
Another line that I'm absolutely shocked by is the Knicks at plus 500. And I almost wonder if I'm falling into this Pistons trap, right? Where I kind of wanted to take them because I felt like the line was mispriced, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't have won any money. But I think the Celtics are vulnerable. Holiday's not 100%. Brown's not 100%. Tatum's not 100%. Porzingis isn't 100%. And I know the Knicks, we saw a lot of flaws here. And I'm, you know, if we knew the Boston was fully healthy, then yeah, this minus 500 is right. But with the way this injury reports come out and the inconsistencies we've seen from the Celtics, that seemed too high to me too. What do you think, five star? Knicks not getting enough respect, or is this line proper with the Knicks at plus 500 to win the series?
I won't be bidding this series at all because it's just one of those really funny series to me. The reason why is, as you said, the Celtics against the Magic didn't look too good to me. You know, like, even though they swept them, it wasn't convincing. You know, it was a lot of times where the Magic could have easily, you know, won it. Not, did they sweep them? No, they won 4-1.
Gentlemen sweep.
Yeah, gentlemen
4-1.
Sweep. All right. It seems like that game, like, they could have got another game, at least Orlando, in my opinion. I watched every game, and a lot of them were close going into the fourth quarter, the last game, close going into the half, and then the Celtics burn off. But I don't know. It seems like maybe Tatum and Brown and those guys ratchet up their game a little bit more for the Knicks. You know, as in some teams that you just, you know, you play better. I think that they know that the Knicks are really popular, and they feel like the Knicks are even more popular than them, even though they're the world champs.
They might be.
Yeah, so it kind of makes them play like we're going to show everybody. So that's the motivation that I don't want to fade, you know, because very much so the Celtics could sweep them. You know, it might be 4-0. A 4-0 probably pays a ridiculous odds, you know. But very, very well, it could go 7-2 because the Knicks are scrappy, you know, and they have a closer in Jalen Brunson that we know can get baskets. He's the number one clutch player in the fourth quarter in the league. So just too much, you know, different ways that it could go for me. It's too much, you know, just room for error for me as a bettor. So I won't be playing either side. I'll be playing each game individually as they go. I like to see the first game and just kind of see if the Knicks are still like feel kind of cursed against the Celtics, or are they confident in this motivation? Like, hey, we haven't beat these guys all year, you know, let's go at them. Because we know the Knicks have a really solid team and they play really well together. To me, they actually have more team chemistry, in my opinion, than the Celtics do this year. But we'll see if that translates to wins.
I mean, Ski, so I watched the series against Detroit and I say, boy, you have this much trouble with an inexperienced one-dimensional team. I want to fade them. And then I see the price and I'm like, boy, I'm not the only one. At this point, I'm priced out of fading the Knicks. When I look at this, it's like either take a shot on the Knicks or just, you know, there's nothing wrong with being an NBA fan. There's no rule that says you just because we do this show, we need to bet every single game. How are you approaching this series?
I agree that Boston is a little vulnerable and banged up, but not banged up enough to where I trust the Knicks to beat them. Like, the Knicks, for one, I've seen enough times with Thibodeau teams, like, they also start to wear down as the playoffs go on because they play so many minutes through the regular season. And if I'm not mistaken, not this past game, but the game before, a couple people getting banged up a little bit in that game. So
Brunson and Hart both missed time in game five, which is another reason I was on Detroit last night. And I think, oh, one of those guys is going to be out by the third quarter, right? And then they're just going to be thinking about game seven. But nope. You know, in those elimination games, you got to come out early. You know, I think when Detroit fell behind in that first quarter, it was tough. I mean, it was great for them to fight back at halftime and great for them to fight back in the fourth. I felt they put themselves behind the eight ball. But I understand what you're saying there. So I'm sorry, continue there with the breakdown, but just want to point out that you're right, that Brunson and Hart both missed time in game five.
Yeah, so between that and just the wear and tear on everybody's body in New York, them struggling with Detroit, like I can't put my money on New York, even if I think Boston is vulnerable. I think this is a series where I'd feel a little bit more comfortable just betting game to game. And this first game, I mean,
what's my line here? 8.5 for the Knicks.
I trust a couple things, no matter who's vulnerable and who's not. Both teams like to play slow. Both teams good defensive teams. I mean, if I want to put my money on anything off the rip, it's the under in that game.
Yeah, it could be one. I'm seeing a 213 now, right? By game four, game five, we could be looking at a 203, right? And be thinking, boy, remember when we got that 213 to start? That was an easy win. All right, final thoughts and the Knicks and the Pacers before that'll be all the basketball, right? And then we'll move on to the tennis.
Yep.
Yeah, anything else for us on that series?
That good old tennis.
Yeah, it's time for
tennis. All right. Yeah, let's go to the newest star in the tennis handicapping world, Ski. You've been taking the world by storm, man. You know, they're all asking you for some WNBA picks, but you're getting up at 2 a.m. with the rest of us watching this Madrid Open. And boy, what a fun final we have with Aryna Sabalenka taking on Coco Gauff. And it feels like it was just last week we were on the show talking about, boy, Coco's not right mentally. And I said, maybe Coco's just, you know, Americans, we love the vacation in Europe. Maybe she's just spending too much time at all those vaunted restaurants and places to shop, but not the case at all. And that's why I think tennis is fun yet challenging to bet, because last week, it was really tough to get behind her. And this week she's looked to be one of the best players in the world again. Five-star, let's start with you. Can our favorite American player get it done against Aryna Sabalenka?
She has a great opportunity here. She's 5-4 head up against Aryna. It's crazy because it shows you how important altitude is, because Madrid is the one place on clay that, man, Sabalenka's really good. She has been to the finals, I want to say, 4 out of the last 5 years of the tournament. Mm-hmm. She's lost 7 of 9 clay finals. Guess which two she won at Madrid. So that's something to consider. But I also think that Coco is just playing really good tennis right now. And I think with the two ladies that Coco beat, with beating Mira Andreeva and dominating her, beating Swiatek and dominating her, beating Bencic and dominating her, these are three women who are top in the world. Bencic, before she was had the maternity leave, she was one of the top 10 players in the world. But we know that Andreeva's been on fire. And Coco just reminded her that, hey, you came on tour at 16 and were pretty good, but I started at 14. I'm the greatest, prodigy that this game has seen, and just smacked her. And she's on Siontech. So this is what Coco did. I don't know if she figured out that Siontech is like a witch or something, is zapping her energy. Because before the game matches now, bro, you know, I've watched every time they played each other spread, right? So before the match, before they do the coin toss, they shake hands, they smile. And drop. Bro, when Coco comes to play Siontech, she won't look at her now. Like, will not look at her. She holds her racket like this, like, I don't want to touch her. And ever since she's been doing that, she's been mopping her. That's now three straight. And she started that a couple, I think that was maybe was that U.S. Open, I think that she did it first. And I was looking when she did, like, this is weird, but it works for her. Maybe she has to completely focus on herself or something and doesn't want any of the energy from the handshake. But I think that Coco can get this one done. And the only reason why is because we just saw Sabs lose to Ostapenko in the final. I know that she feels really comfortable in Madrid, but we know that Sabs will get down on herself really quick. She hates playing players like Coco who can get to her kill shots. Like, Coco is going to make her play one extra ball, and that gets her really frustrated. So if Coco's able to do what we've seen her do forever, and that's turn defense to offense, and her forehand is working, and she's doing what she's been doing all week, which is just go power forehand to the corner and just use your athleticism to track down balls to make them get back to the backhand so you can hit the winners, she's going to be okay, because we know that she's a better all-around player than Sabalenka, but Sabalenka has the power and the conditions do favor Sabalenka. I just trust Coco a little bit more in this situation. I think she finds a way to get it done, really confident after beating Mira Andreeva and Siontek.
All right, a lot of new viewers to the show here as the Wagering World continues to get more and more views every time we put something out, and I know a lot of people came for the football. Let me give a quick beginner's perspective for what Five Star said. When he's talking about the altitude, that speeds the court up. Fast courts favor power players. Sabalenka is the hardest hitting woman on tour, so it makes more sense that she would have more success in Madrid, a court that plays fast, even though it's clay, the slowest surface on the tour, as opposed to what we will see coming up in 3 weeks at the French Open. And one final word there.
Rome.
Well, Rome plays slow.
And she beat Sabalenka in Rome in the final.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a lot harder.
But what I'm saying is we use this time of year to scout for our French Open picks, because, of course, that's when everyone's going to come on and there'll be a lot more tennis betting. Be careful of these Madrid results. They can be fool's gold because the court plays so much faster. Ski, yeah. I know that you've been doing well in tennis, man. But you're such a good handicapper. We can't call it beginner's luck. It's just using the acumen that you've learned and the discipline you've learned from betting these other sports and taking that winning process into your tennis handicapping, and you're off to a great start. You even got your own package over there on wagertalk.com. And I hope that I'm seeing a video by the end of the year where you're talking about number one at Wager Talk for tennis for the year. Ski, yeah. I'm rooting for you. Talk to me about how you're approaching this match between the Belarusian Aryna Sabalenka and the American Coco Gauff.
Yeah, I appreciate the kind words. I took a little bit of a break from, betting tennis so much every day just because it was so much playoff basketball for me to watch. And, I got to do my videos and stuff on that. But I still been watching some tennis, I'll tell you that. And the last time we talked about Coco, she was playing bad. She was looking terrible. And, I'm newer to tennis. So that's all that I saw as far as, what I was seeing from Coco. But I know, based on her name, who she is, that she was better than what she saw. She entered this Madrid tournament, the first match, I believe, she was still playing sorry. Like, that first set, she was getting smoked. And it's like just like that.
Got bagged by Yastrzemski.
Yeah. And then it's like that gif or that meme when LeBron is sitting there in a Heat uniform like this. It's like she awoke.
Oh, yeah. It's
just she been on fire ever since. Like, this is the real Coco. This is who I've been waiting to see. So, like Five Star said, seeing her beat Andreeva, who's really good, been playing well. Like, I just feel like the competition that Coco's beating is better than what Sabalenka's been playing lately. What you guys said as far as the altitude and that, We all know Sab likes to bully everybody. And when she get those fast courts or hard courts, she can do it. She's made the finals, I think, four of the last 5 years here in Madrid because the court plays a little bit better for her. Like, this might be her last chance to get a win before, you know, these slower courts. So I'm worried about that. But just recent performance, like, I feel like Coco's been playing better than Sabalenka. And you're getting a little bit of plus money or even to take her. Like, I'll be more inclined to bet that than bet Sabalenka. I think, honestly, I think Coco over her games is probably a good bet, or to match the total over. Like, I think it's going to be a closely contested match. And I do think Coco has a good chance to win.
All right. There you have it here. And we look forward to talking more tennis with you this summer. Now let's move on to the people segment, the ball and parlay. Five star, what do you got for us?
You know, I love football. If it's football, I'm betting it, man. And I've been following this United Football League for a long time. It started as the XFL, and then you had the USFL competing, and now they both combined. And we're getting some really good spring football, and I've done really well so far. Well, me and the clients are 5-1 on it, and I've given out 3 winners on the show. So let's give 2 more out. We got one tonight. It's going to be the Arlington Renegades, who are a really good team. They were upset last week by the Defenders and a great comeback. And then they're going to St. Louis to face the Battlehawks. Battlehawks, strong team. They had 2 losses, but now they're fighting back. 2 straight losses, and now they're fighting back, getting back to who they were. This was because they lost Manny Wilkins, who was their starting quarterback. He allowed them to do some things with the run-pass option that they had to change up a little bit. Now Max Duggan is in as the quarterback, former TCU star. I think the only thing he needs to worry about is getting the ball to Hakeem Butler. Last week, I told everyone on the video that I did that Hakeem Butler was back for the Battlehawks. He's the best receiver in the UFL. He went for 200 yards. They're back at home again, so I think they're going to put up some points as Duggan gets a little bit more used to the offense. They have to get the ball more to Jacob Sailors, who's their star running back. He's really good. They're facing a Renegades team who's really well coached by Bob Stoops. Luis Perez is a solid quarterback. He's probably the best spring quarterback that we've seen. He's won the championship with the XFL league. They also have Kalen Ballage, who was a star running back at Arizona State. But I just think that going on the road, the emotions of blowing last week's game is going to really be difficult for the Renegades to get up. Give me the home team. I'm going with St. Louis on this one. I think the line is failed to just a pick 'em. So you get St. Louis at money line, minus 120 to minus 130. I'd also lean to the over on this game. It's 42.5. They're playing inside the dome, and I think that both teams will be able to put up some points. Also, on Saturday, I'm going to give out an early morning start. It's going to be 11 p.m. if you're in Houston, and it's 9 a.m. on the West Coast. We're going with my Houston Roughnecks. You know, Spread, we've been cashing a lot of Roughnecks tickets. They're one of my favorite teams to bet right now, not only because they're from Houston, but because their coach Curtis Johnson finally has the quarterback that he's been looking for in Jalen McClendon. Former Baylor star is playing really well. They routed San Antonio last week because we were able to cash that on the show 27-3. And before that, they had a huge win against Birmingham. Memphis is coming into town. The Showbuzz have a new quarterback and Dresser Win. But even with that said, they're just not as good of a team as the Houston Roughnecks. So Houston has really turned the corner and preparing to be one of the better teams in the league. The line is 3.5. I'm going to lay it. I think that the Roughnecks can win by at least a touchdown. So those are my 2 free plays. Going to be the Roughnecks tomorrow at -3.5. And then tonight you can take the St. Louis Battlehawks on a pick or money line minus 120. And also I lean to over 42.
First show live, guys, episode 59, but the first time we've gone live. We appreciate everybody for joining us. If you're on Twitter/X, head on over to YouTube. Please subscribe to the channel. Give us a thumbs up and leave a comment. I don't always respond to them all, but I thumbs up them all and I do read them all. So we appreciate you guys for supporting the wagering world. Ski, your best bet for the weekend.
Man, I'm so hungry, bro. I'm about to pass out around here. I mean,
don't worry, we got about 2 minutes left, bro. We don't got much.
Don't fall
check
out
the script right after this. It says sign off.
All right. My best bet for the weekend, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you guys, first of all, and say that I'm going to be making these bets today. I haven't made any yet, but one I'm pretty sure I can support and get to the window with. I'll go with Clippers and Denver. Right now, the opener was 204.5. I still see a 204.5 out there, but it is starting to go up. And I talked about it earlier. Like, these teams really can be really efficient offensively. And what I saw in this last game, like, yes, they're trying to play good defense, but every time they get a stop, they are full out sprinting the other side of the court. Like, the pace of play in this game that I'm expecting, if it's what we saw in that second and third quarter, should be able to easily get over 204.5. So I'll mention this too, to go along with that, because I just looked it up while Five started talking. But game sevens that are not in the first round, they are 28-10 to the under. That's about a little bit above, like a little bit below 74%. But if you look at game sevens in the first round, they're 16-15 to the over. Big difference when you still got some energy and not so drained by the playoffs. So I think over 204.5 is the winning ticket in that game.
Yeah, and that's a great point too, right? Because in the first round, these teams aren't the elite defensive teams, because we all know it's really hard to make a conference championship or a conference finals series without playing good defense. But hey, 16 of the 30 teams make the playoffs, right? So you're not always going to see the most elite defense. So I think that's a great way of using these stats, because I always talk about these trends and how they can be deceptive. And how, you know, we know this from doing content, I can cherry pick my trends to support the team I want, right? I can sort by 7 games or 17 games. So be careful with those. And I think Ski's done a good job of actually digging into the data and not just blindly betting a game 7 under, which I was going to go do, Ski. So thank you very much. But what I will do is I will bet the Denver Nuggets in that game. I just, you know, at the end of the day, I like Jokic, I like Murray, and I do like the home court advantage. And that's why, even though, you know, inside the NBA will tell you the regular season doesn't matter, it actually does, because if they were playing this in Los Angeles, I'd be on the Clippers. So give me the Denver Nuggets at home to close it out. Line went down when we're talking now. I only have to lay 1.5 offshore on Bookmaker. So that's it for us. What do you think, Five Star? Pretty nice going live, huh? We don't have to worry about getting live, this up, man. On
we'll
time.
Be doing it more. Yeah, we'll be doing this more. Next time I'll sit somewhere in my yard. I got a late start where you guys can see me a little bit better. If you guys haven't, go to www.thewageringworld.com. I'd love for you to sign up. You can find merchandise like right here, the Ready Red logo cap for the show. You see Spread with the cobalt blue Waging World hoodie on. I got the Waging World cup here. You know, we're going to, you know, keep it going and represent the show, man. It's always us versus the machine. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. Come on, go Rockets, man. We'll let you guys know when we're coming up next week. We'll see you live next week at some time. Once again, we appreciate Ski for coming on. Y'all go check him out at Ski Profit.